You're listening to the Script Lab Podcast. I'm Shani Edwards.
Happy New Year, guys. I'm so excited to start 2020 with all of you. Together, we've created this amazing community of writers, and I can't thank you enough for being a part of it. If you have any suggestions for the podcast, like a topic or a film you'd like me to cover, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, at Shani Edwards or at the Script Lab, and let me know. On this episode, I have Jumanji, The Next Level, writer-director Jake Kasdan, along with co-writers Jeff Pinkner and Scott Rosenberg. A very warm thank you to all three of them for taking the time out of their busy holiday and travel season to chat with me over the phone. They talk about the influences they took from the original Jumanji from 1995, the importance of a strong antagonist, and Jake talks about what he's learned from his Oscar-nominated father, Lawrence Kasdan, writer of films like The Big Chill, The Empire Strikes Back, and my personal favorite, Raiders of the Lost Ark. But let's hear a clip from Jumanji, The Next Level.
Where's the jungle? This is a whole new thing. Nobody told us we had to do a whole new thing.
Okay, something went wrong.
Come on.
I'm coming.
Grandpa Eddie?
Morning.
Did you guys see Spencer?
Is that? I think he went back in. We gotta go get him.
You know something?
We haven't even picked our guys yet. Are we in Florida?
Oh my God.
Wait.
We're in the wrong body!
My joints feel like butter.
Oh no. Loose myself.
This can't be happening!
I came back and things actually got worse.
Look at this.
1, 2, 3.
We have some issues here.
The game is busted.
Listen up now. This is a dangerous place.
You've got to have eyes in the back of your head.
What in the Sam hell just happened to him?
What the hell is this?
Would you look at me? I haven't looked like this since...
Never. You look like this never.
I think my eyes are a different color.
All of you is a different color.
Hi, guys. Welcome to the podcast. Jumanji, The Next Level is so much fun. So for people like me who grew up with the original Jumanji with our beloved Robin Williams, this movie hit me as really special and nostalgic because... I watched the original while my sort of childhood imagination was still intact. And I'm wondering if each of you could tell me a little bit about why this franchise was so special to you. And just tell me who's speaking so I can keep it clear.
Sure. Well, I mean, I can dive in. You know, I think that all of us involved always really admired the first movie. It's a really unusual movie, and when you look at it now, it's even more unusual. It's a tone that really almost nobody even endeavors to go for anymore, which is like a legitimately, it's almost like a horror movie for kids, with this, you know, sort of a very kind of sweetly emotional story at the center of it, and then this big conceit, you know, that is that we grabbed onto in a different way with these movies. But, you know, it's always embedded for what Robin did in the movie, I think, first and foremost. And then for, you know, at the time, it was really this kind of groundbreaking movie in terms of what they were doing with the effects and everything. And, you know, it made a big impression on all of us involved, I think.
Yeah, this is Jeff, and I'll say that I entirely agree, and this is stuff we've talked about a lot from the beginning. Another element that I think we all really responded to and loved in that first film is it's kids who suddenly have to deal with a circumstance so much bigger and beyond anything that they have the capacity to deal with. It's the cat in the hat thing. Like, we have to put everything back in place before our parents come home, or we're really going to get in trouble.
Right.
And these movies sort of take the spirit of that, and as Jake said, sort of like just attack it in a different way.
Wonderful. So how did the writing process work? Did you guys get together and pitch ideas, break the story? How did that all come down?
Well, when we actually, this is Scott. I think when we realized that the first one was going to work so well, and then, you know, we in the studio and everybody started talking about the sequel, the big idea for all of us, I think, was how do we tell the story again, but give it a twist, make it new, make it fresh, make it not feel like, oh, we're just doing another sequel by the numbers. And the idea, and also just make it fun for the actors. And I think that once sort of the sort of game is broken idea came to fore, and that they weren't going to be playing the same, the sort of old men. Once the old men idea came in, as we called it, we really, I think thought we were onto something. And all of a sudden, this movie had a legitimate reason to exist beyond just, let's make the studio a lot of money.
That's great. I think one of my favorite moments in the film is when Spencer has to share his bedroom with his grandfather, played by Danny DeVito, who's recovering from hip surgery. The story moves out of nostalgia for me and into character growth, because I think we can all remember that time when we realized how fragile our grandparents are and how they won't be around us forever. Was that part of what was going on for you guys in this scene?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, like Scott was saying, you know, for me, coming back to, you know, it had been a really kind of thrilling experience making the first movie, and the idea of doing another one was attractive because we had all really enjoyed working together. You know, us, we had worked, had a really kind of great collaboration. It's a little bit unusual situation on the first movie, but it was really satisfying. I loved working with these guys on that movie. We had a great time making it. I had a great time with the actors. And as attractive as all of that was, we felt, you know, pretty strongly, all of us, that if we were going to come back, there had to be some really compelling sort of new story to tell, because we had already told the story of the first movie. I didn't want to just do that again. You know, I felt like we had done what we set out to do, and we had done it 20 minutes before. We didn't want to just repeat that. And so the thing you're talking about, which is what would happen, you know, that what's going on between Spencer and his grandfather, and the idea of these two protagonists at very different moments in their lives, finding common ground as they both feel sort of displaced, and the game sort of reaching out to both of them who sort of need this in different ways, and going on separate adventures that kind of help them in different ways, felt like a way of continuing what we had started in the first movie, and that was, to me, one of the strongest parts of the idea. Like, that was a big part of what had drawn me to it in the first place, and it felt like this was a way of doing that with new characters and with a sort of major reshuffling of how the pieces work that was really compelling. And like Scott says, when that sort of crystallized, everything kind of followed. So this idea about Spencer and his grandfather, Eddie, and then Eddie and his relationship with his, like, estranged best friend, Milo, that was sort of, I think, the seed for us, you know. And then everything else kind of piles on top of that, which is all of the action and the sequences and how does the adventure work and, you know, how are we working the kind of mechanics of what everybody's doing and how do we keep changing it up and surprising people, hopefully. All of that followed from that initial character idea that's exactly what you're describing, you know, about this relationship between a guy and his grandfather.
And this is Jeff, and I'll quickly add to that, like both of my partners and friends and colleagues just said, in the first movie, it was just as far as, like, writing and having an emotional thread to follow, it was very easy for the three of us to connect to this idea of insecurity on different levels, of, like, not being secure in your own skin and questioning who you are, which is, you know, for whatever reason, something that I know I and probably all three of us, you know, continue to deal with no matter how old we get. And for this movie, the idea of feeling displaced and watching your elderly relatives deal with aging is something that the three of us could personally connect to and sort of gave us an emotional through line to really connect to and follow through the movie.
You really found the magic there. And once I saw the two of them in those...
Thanks for saying that.
Sure. Once I saw the two of them in those single beds, I was on board 100% emotionally.
Good. It also felt like the other thing about that, you know, it in addition to being a launching pad for their relationship and their dynamic, it was also a good way of illustrating this unusual moment that I think a lot of people relate to that Spencer's going through, where you come home for the first time and everything just feels a little bit different. And the idea that his grandfather has moved into his bedroom and is going to, like, sort of complain through his Christmas vacation seemed like also a really kind of a strong comedy idea. It was like, it was all those things at once. It was like a way to show what Spencer's going through, a way to set their relationship, and then a way of telling you something about each of them, you know?
Yeah, very well done. Maybe you could talk about the theme of how the Jumanji video game allows the players to explore becoming their own hero in ways maybe they couldn't without the video game.
This is Jeff. I'll jump in. There was something that we've talked about a lot is there's absolutely a mystical element to that first movie. And we wanted to maintain that throughout these movies. And the way we dial into that is this idea that the game has some agency. On some mystical, spiritual level, the game picks the people that play it or that get sucked in and associates them with avatars that will teach them something about themselves. You know, it's borrowing a little bit of that Wizard of Oz idea of the game helps you via the powers it imbues or doesn't, the avatar's powers, strengths and weaknesses. It purposefully teaches you lessons. And even as simple as an idea as Bethany wasn't sucked into the game in this movie, because largely she learned the lessons she needed to learn in the first movie. The game didn't, she didn't need the game, and the game didn't really need her, but for the fact that she desperately wanted to go in to help her friends.
How did the idea of the avatar switching come about? Because that was hilarious.
This is Scott now. I think our big fear in early stages, the three of us, were when we came up with this idea that we totally embraced and loved, which was, you know, having the old fellas and having everybody switch their avatars. I think one of our major concerns was that the first movie had so, when I say first movie, I mean Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah.
Had so much goodwill. People loved it so much. And we were a little afraid. We were like, oh my God, are we, you know, messing with the formula? Where they're going to come expecting Spencer to be Gravestone and it's not going to happen and people are going to be, and I think that once we came up with this idea of, wait, there's a way that we can have our cake and eat it too, which is switch everything up for basically 2/3 of the movie and then get them back to their OG avatars, you know, the guys from the first, the characters from the first movie. If we can accomplish that, then we're really on to something. Because then it's that, I mean, we early on, we were like, oh my God, you'd play the Guns N' Roses song and they would, you know, they would all get back to their, like, it was alive in our minds early on. And then we sort of stumbled upon,
right,
no pun intended, the whole idea for the water being that thing, which we set up early on when Jack and Karen switch, and et cetera. Right, guys? It was something like that.
That's right. And I think to add on to that, I would say, you know, there was, as we were sort of kicking ideas around and figuring out what made sense and then what felt like there was still something missing, I think that we all loved this idea that eventually they go back to the characters that we know from before and that something becomes a little more right for them, you know, in order to finally finish it, they're able to, when they get back to their original configuration, they're in their comfort zone, they're able to kind of get to the end. But there was also this sort of thematic idea that I thought was really strong for Spencer, which is that he goes back in sort of out of this yearning to reconnect with what it felt like to be that guy. And when he gets there, he's not expecting it, but he doesn't get to be that guy. And over the course of it, though he ultimately is the better game player in the Brave Stone avatar, he's the guy who knows how to use that power. I think we're also kind of getting to this idea that I thought was really good for this, which is being the biggest, strongest guy is not enough. That is not the final solution to the game, so to speak, at the metaphor level. And part of what Spencer is kind of grappling with in this movie is accepting who he actually is and accepting that no matter what body you're in, you're sort of only as good as your team. And so suddenly there was like a sort of thematic basis that felt like it really justified what also felt like the most fun kind of direction for the movie to take. And from that notion and from his character, the rest of it became, well, what do we want to see these actors doing? And as they switch around, and it would be, I love watching Jack do this new thing because he's just this virtuoso genius that I've worked with. You know, I've made 5 movies with Jack. And I love watching him do that. But also, how incredible would it be to see him play a whole bunch of different stuff because he can do that? You know, they're all incredibly agile performers, and the thought of letting them play multiple characters within the movie is like, well, that's, I think, really fun. And ultimately the goal of all of this, the movie should be really fun, you know?
Of course. As writers, it's really easy to focus on our protagonists because we like them so much and we relate to them. But my opinion is that it's the antagonist that really drives the story. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you settled on Jürgen the Brutal and what he brought to the story as the antagonist.
Jeff, you want
to? Yeah, sure. So a couple of things. One, you're entirely correct, I think, or at least I think you're correct. I think that movies are often, the strength and the weakness of movies is often in their antagonist. So we attack that problem in a couple ways. One is, and I will answer Jürgen in 1 second. We knew that there's a couple of different versions of antagonism in the film. The first is, even among our core 4 and then 5, we know there was going to be conflict and antagonism among them because they're the characters we're spending the most time with. And then, by way of a video game adventure, we did spend a ton of time talking about Jürgen, but we'd probably spend an equal amount of time talking about what are the animal obstacles and the game obstacles that they're going to face. Because on some level, and we kind of believe this, but then saw it come true with the first movie, I think there is definitely an enjoyment factor in, we're making a video game movie about video games and about the ways that adventures on video games unfold. And it's often those first wave of baddies and the second wave of baddies until you get to, you know, what video games call the hero level, when you actually fight the bad guy. So we knew in this movie it was ostriches and mandrels and credit to Jake and the VFX team. I think those creatures were realized so much better in this movie, just visually and three-dimensionally, and they're really scary. And then Jürgen, it's a hard one, and at least for me, I'm not entirely sure we solved the puzzle. In a video game, in a movie, it's typically that you want the most fully dimensionalized bad guy you can have. In video games, they're purposefully not. So we were sort of trying to square the circle of giving Jurgen a really fully realized story, and yet in many ways he's just the person in this movie. In the first movie, the bad guys were chasing our heroes. In this movie, our heroes are chasing the bad guy, and we have a phenomenal actor, and I think we gave him a really great characterization, but we're not really following his story by design. I'm sure that's an unsatisfying answer, and one of my partners will do a better job of answering it.
The only thing I remember from the beginning is Jake insisting that whoever Jurgen is, he is bigger than Dwayne Johnson.
Wait.
The idea that wouldn't it be great if it's basically that's the scene that you shot where he's punching him and punching him and punching him and the guy's not going down. Jake was he was hammering us on like every movie that Dwayne does, he's always bigger and stronger than everybody, and like wouldn't it be great if he finally met his match? And just when you see them, you know, side by side, and Jurgen is so much bigger than him.
Yeah, that was an idea I got really excited about. It, the challenge of it turns out to be that almost no one is bigger than him. To find a really good actor who's bigger than him is incredibly difficult. And we actually found the guy. You know, we had talked about Rory McCann from early on because, you know, he made such an impression in Game of Thrones and he's brilliant. I didn't know, you know, what it would actually look like, the two of them standing next to each other. He's brilliant. And it's lucky he's brilliant because they're really... It's not a long list of people who can talk that way and act with such kind of subtlety and authority and hold their own again, you know, with this kind of cast, and also play the physicality of it that way. And Rory, we lucked out with him. I also think, you know, one of the things that we felt like we could do better the second time out was, you know, I felt like after we made the first movie, we had Bobby Cannavale playing the villain, who is also a genius, like a truly brilliant, one-of-a-kind kind of screen presence. And I just felt like we hadn't given him nearly enough. Like, we had teased on sort of a thought about how the villains would work, and we knew that with a new villain in the second movie, we wanted to try to figure out how to keep that sort of NPC. He's a video game character. He's sort of a little bit mechanical, the way that all the NPCs are a little mechanical, but we wanted the guy to be able to play something. And so it was sort of a running challenge the whole time. It's like, how do we make this also like a, we should get someone wonderful and then we should give him something to do. Like, we should do our part, you know? And yeah. Hopefully we pulled it off, but he's brilliant.
Yeah, he was great. Excellent choice. Are there any Easter eggs from the 1995 Robin Williams Jumanji in this, the Next Level film?
Well, the, you know, Bebe Neuwirth shows up at the end, playing essentially the character that she was playing in the Robin Williams movie.
Great choice.
Which is something that I think a lot of people might not immediately realize when they see it. But I also think, you know, part of our hope was that if we were going to connect to the original movie, it should be in a way that's so organic that you don't need that reference instantly in order to appreciate what it's doing in our story.
Sure. I have one last question for you, Jake. For my listener, or for my readers who don't know, your father is Lawrence Kasdan. And many of us grew up inhabiting so many amazing worlds he created. I wonder what you learned from your father about writing and directing.
Sure. Well, you know, he is my primary mentor and teacher ever. You know, I think that it's almost, I would say, the very first stuff I learned about everything, and particularly about movies, you know, I learned from him. And I think that his sensibility, it has been determinative in many aspects of my own. You know, we're very close always have been, so we're very involved with each other. And, you know, one of the things that's been sort of a kick about making these Jumanji movies is that it's the first time that I've ever, you know, I had always primarily made sort of comedies, mostly like R-rated kind of edgy comedies, and a lot of television. I'd never really done anything that was even in the kind of ballpark of the movies that, you know, some of the movies that he wrote. And to sort of be a little, you know, I think that these Jumanji movies are certainly influenced by, you know, descended from some of the classic movies that he worked on a long time ago, and it's been cool to sort of link up to that a little bit. I've loved doing it.
That's great. I want to thank you guys so much for making this interview happen. I wish you the best holidays coming up, and I can't wait to see your next projects.
Oh, well, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, you take care.
Thank you. Have a great holiday yourself.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.